In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Excellence. Welcome back into another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in. Mitch, well done. Absolutely killing it.
I had some juice left in that one, man. Let's not blow out some eardrums here.
That was great. Fantastic. Your neighbors are wondering if there's an old-timey fire truck driving by at this very moment, or if they're, what's going on over there.
Poor Linda. she has to listen to this every Tuesday, and I just feel terrible for her.
Poor Linda. Well, she should be tuning into the Sports Hour. And if she is, Linda, thanks for listening.
Very sweet lady.
You're very welcome to be here with us. And we thank you all for tuning in. Mitch, it is November 2nd. Somehow the times keep a flying, you blink and it's turns out every day that goes by is another day that goes by. It's kind of crazy how that works, huh?
I know. It's just flying by. It's Nog season now. So
it is. I almost bought some, but I didn't see. But here's the thing. You gotta get good Nog. Okay. Yeah. And unless it's Southern Comfort, I ain't buying it at the store. I haven't found another Nog that I enjoy. So,
oh, you're a SoCo Nog guy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, okay. I mix a little bit of my own with get the Nog and then a little bit of Captain in there.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I'm sure that, with that, it doesn't really matter what the Nog is.
Yeah. Yeah. Some good old Breyers or whatever. The right company.
There you go. There you go. But it is that time of year. It is true. The Nog, we're we love some Nog here on the podcast, and it is the holidays. How was your Halloween? Was it great? Was it good?
It was great. I love the niece was Buzz Lightyear this year.
Oh, nice. So, that is awesome.
She was Buzz Lightyear with a tutu on. So she had to wear a little tutu.
Of course.
With the Buzz Lightyear costume, but it's always fun getting to hang out with the fam. We're not a big Halloween family, so we like to just kind of get together. We do a homemade pizzas on that night, so we do some homemade pizzas, and then we kind of sit on the front porch and have a beverage and hand out candy to the kids that come by. So it was a good time just kind of hanging out with the family and everything. Always nice to see the kids out and about. And I'll tell you what, it was busier this year than I remember because, last year it wasn't a whole lot going on, as far as people getting out there. Right. So, it just seemed packed this year, which was great to see everyone out and about and everything. So it was a good time. How was your Halloween, though?
Well, I'm glad you got all the trick-or-treaters, Mitch, because we got one person.
Oh no.
We got one person that rang the doorbell, but I was upstairs. By the time I got there, they were gone. So I didn't even hand out a single piece of candy on Halloween. I think a lot of people in our area celebrated on Saturday. I was at the BYU football game Saturday night till very late, 8:15 kickoff. So I was gone all night. Caitlin was at, out with friends. And so if we had trick-or-treaters on Saturday, I didn't put anything out. So we probably got them all on Saturday. On Sunday, we had one person stop by. So, but that's fine. I have plenty of Milky Ways and Reese's for myself to eat, which I guess I am not complaining about. But I enjoy handing out the candy. It was, that was kind of a bummer, but
Best Halloween candy in your opinion.
Oh, Reese's, hands down.
Oh, it's yep. Reese's. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. I love Reese's.
I think I'm kind of a Twix guy. I'm a Twix guy myself.
Twix are great. Twix are fantastic. I love Reese's. I love Milky Ways. Those are probably my two favorite. I can always go for those.
Yeah.
I like the good, you gotta get chocolate on Halloween, That's where I'm about. None of that Twizzlers. Get that out of here. Mike and Ike's. Oh, Twizzlers, what are we doing?
Licorice in general stinks. That's true. Like old people candy. mind.
So. Yep, absolutely. But, and that's what we came on the podcast to talk about today. So thank you guys for listening. You know, Mitch, no, we have actually a lot to talk about today. NFL trade deadline came and went today. It was like 4 p.m. Eastern time was the trade deadline. So not the most exciting trade deadline that we've had before, but some notable moves that we're going to talk about here on the podcast. And then, you know, obviously our week 8 reactions, we're going to hit on a couple games, a couple of the more notable games from this last week, you know, and then as always the campus tour quick picks this week, Mitch, the revealing tonight of the college football playoff rankings. We have some very strong opinions about those that we'll get into here on the second half of the podcast. So you'll want to stick around for the campus tour there. But it'll be a fun show. I'm going to be fired up in that. I'll tell you that already. We just in prepping for this, when we were talking, I was ready to go.
Yeah. Within the first minute and a half of us meeting up, you were already just guns a-blazing on this thing, and I'm with you. I stand with you. But yeah, we'll have a ton to get into that. So, lots of good stuff coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's jump right into it. Start it off the same way we always do. Consistency is part of the brand. Mitch, what time is it? Tell them what time it is.
It is time to get into the news. Let's get into the news. I said it was worn out. Okay. I said it was worn out.
So subdued. It caught me off guard. I was bracing for it. You guys can't see this, but I'm like brace for it. It's like, you know, it's a lot of energy coming forward.
Your shoulders went up. You're like,
yeah, I get tense. I'm ready. But that one, you know.
Hey, when I say it's worn out, man. That's just the way I feel. We got to come up with something new. But until then, you get a subdued story time by the fireplace, Mitch.
Okay.
Enter the news, I think. So.
All right. Well, hey, you know, it is time for the news. And we're going to start with the NFL trade deadline as, you know, the biggest sort of news coming down today. Biggest trade was not today, but yesterday, Monday, November 1st. Von Miller, the 8-time Pro Bowler, All-Pro Super Bowl champion for the Denver Broncos, heading to L.A., the Los Angeles Rams, adding yet another superstar to their team, and specifically that defense. 2 day 2 picks in the 2022 draft, a second and a third round pick. The Rams are sending to the Broncos in exchange for Von Miller. The Broncos will also pay $9 million of the $9.7 million base salary remaining for Von Miller this season. So essentially the entire thing, hence why we see this second and third round pick. Mitch, before we get into the impact on the field, I kind of want to break this down first in the sense of the cap, the trade. I saw a lot of memes. I tweeted some jokes yesterday about the way that the Rams view draft picks. You know, their poor scouting department must feel like an absolute waste of money because they do their job and then the Rams trade away all their draft picks anyways. You know, they have like only a 5th round pick, I think, in the 2022 draft at this point. But all that being said, which is all very true, the Rams do trade away picks like nobody else in the NFL. They always get back picks, and they're going to get back multiple comp picks in this offseason for players and coaches, GMs, executives that have moved on. They're going to get 3rd, 4th, 5th round picks back, and they're going to use those strategically to pick certain guys. They're trading away these mid-round picks, Mitch, knowing that they're going to get comp picks back. They're going to get a comp 3rd round pick back for sure this year, maybe even 2. So you could just send off a 3rd round pick to get Denver to pay all of Von Miller's contract, and you're fine. It's actually remarkable that what the Rams are doing with their cap, with their draft capital, how they're building towards win now. They are 100% pedal to the metal, going all in, whatever it takes. And I think it's the right move because it's the only way to go all in. The only way to go all in, Mitch, is to go all in. And credit the Rams for going all in. We'll see if it works. We'll see if it rings a Super Bowl. But at least they're giving it 100%. I respect that.
Yeah, it's something that you absolutely have to respect. I just feel like this is the longest go all in and win right now phase of all time in NFL history. I mean, I feel like they've been trying to do that for the last four seasons. I mean, we saw it in 2018, 2019, 2020, and now here in 2021, that they're going all in and making these moves almost reckless abandon. But they're also doing this very smart, when you, like what you said with the compensation picks, very similar to what Jimmy Johnson did with the Cowboys with the Herschel Walker trade. A little bit different, where he traded with players, but they got compensated for picks if they dropped the players. And so he wanted the picks attached to the players. Very kind of different, but kind of similar, where they're looking at the compensatory picks that they'll get in the deal. You're not getting a first round, highly touted guy that's going to come out of college, but you're still getting these compensatory picks that you've put enough scouting in. Maybe you find a diamond in the rough. Maybe you find a gem with those compensatory picks or the late round picks that they still have. Got to commend the Rams for going all in and trying to win now. And right now, honestly, I think of the last 4 years where we've seen them kind of go with this all in mentality, this is the best shot that I think they have, because they have Matthew Stafford under center, in my opinion, a better quarterback than Jared Goff, a guy that's more, can go out, I think, is, we haven't seen the pedigree, but I think can go win the big games and be in the big moments. They have built the defense that is absolutely terrifying. Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Jalen Ramsey. I mean, just those three names alone, terrifying by themselves, not to mention everything else around them. The Rams have just done a fantastic job of going all in and committing to it. Now, if it doesn't pay off, I think the downfall is going to be very steep and harsh once those guys hit past their prime and they're committed to these guys. But, you know, the Rams got to give them props for going all in as hard as they have and committing to it.
Yeah. Is it better to shoot for the moon and fail than to accept that you are limiting your ceiling at good, but not great? Cause that's what a lot of teams do in the NFL. They'll be content with average to above average. If the occasional playoff berth can be had, we're okay in this area. And at least the Rams are saying, no, we're going to achieve it, or we're going to fail miserably. As you said, the consequences, if it fails, the money, the future, like, it could be really bad. But if you walk out of that with two Super Bowls or a two Super Bowls and one win, you know, maybe you go twice, you win, like, great. It was all worth it, right? It's just a matter of if that could be done. As far as the on-field product, Mitch, everybody eats when Aaron Donald is on the field, right? Everybody eats, especially in the pass rush, especially on the edge. Von Miller is not the Von Miller who absolutely dominated the Panthers in Super Bowl 50. He's not that guy anymore, but he is going to eat in LA. He is going to feast, because everyone feasts around Aaron Donald. He gets so much attention, and rightfully so. It opens up those guys on the edge, one-on-ones all day, every day, whatever you want. And Von Miller is only 32. He's got enough in him. He's got to be able to be a big impact player in LA, more so than maybe we've seen recently, because of the way the team is structured, the way the defense is built around Aaron Donald. So it's a fantastic move for the Rams, because you're going to get the most out of this guy. He is an all pro level player who's maybe past his prime, but you're going to get the absolute most around him because of what you already have on your team. So on the football field, it's a fantastic move. I mean, it just makes their defense that much better, which is a scary proposition.
Yeah. I mean, when Aaron Donald's taking up two, three guys at one time, and you leave Von Miller one-on-one with someone, even when he's not at, you know, in his prime years, it's still a scary thing to think about. So
absolutely.
Melvin Ingram getting moved from the Steelers to the Kansas City Chiefs in exchange for a sixth round pick. We know the narrative of the Kansas City Chiefs defense, and we know exactly what they are. They're garbage. I mean, this team has been not good at all. A little bit interesting to me that they add another edge guy when it feels like maybe they needed a guy in the middle to take up some space, because you guys like Chris Jones and Fred Warner there that are already, the pass rusher guys that you want. They're great pass rusher guys to have on your defense. And then they go ahead and add a third. So it's interesting to add another solid pass rusher in Melvin Ingram to that defense already. Dallin, just your take on, was it the right move for the Chiefs to acquire Melvin Ingram, or should they have gone and maybe pursued something at maybe a little bit more of a positional need basis?
Well, so I think that this is the right spot to address along the defensive line. I think you could have argued that they could have used help along any other the position groups on defense. They kind of need help everywhere, right? I mean, they would have gone for a corner or a safety upgrade over Daniel Sorensen. It could have been huge. Anyone in the middle who can guard tight ends or running backs would have been a great, you know, addition. Safety, linebacker, hybrid, whatever you want to call it. They need help in a lot of places. But I think this is a good place, Mitch, because Chris Jones is a guy who has always worked better in the middle. And in the last year, because of the lack of pass rush, they have forced him outside, opposite of Frank Clark, and have forcing him to be more of an outside rusher, which I think ideally Chris Jones, when he was dominant in the past, in the last couple of years, the Super Bowl runs, he was an inside guy. Maybe getting Melvin Ingram makes you feel comfortable to move Chris Jones back in the middle, as you have now an outside pass rusher in Melvin Ingram to throw alongside Frank Clark. Now you've got Chris Jones in the middle. Now that's not a half bad pass rush, right? Melvin Ingram in and of itself isn't a, you know, fantastic player, a huge upgrade. It's not a Von Miller-esque, you know, difference that we're talking about here. Is a former Pro Bowler, 9 season with the Chargers, you know, just came over to the Steelers this season, past his prime type of guy. But I think because of what it allows Chris Jones to do moving inside, I think it's the right move. And a better pass rush helps disguise a weak secondary. So if it works, it will not only help the defensive line in the front four, but it'll also help the secondary.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point to bring up where, just putting pressure on the quarterback and forcing him to make a decision prematurely definitely can cover up a weak secondary. That's a great point to bring up. Moving Chris Jones inside would absolutely be an advantage. And, you know, have basically three speed guys on the same defensive front is never a bad thing. You know, you're just looking for I think that the assets could have been spent somewhere else trying to get a big body to plug up the middle, because they're getting absolutely crushed on the ground as well.
Sure.
And they're in a lot of situations now where teams are running the football against them because they're trying to just keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. They're keeping pace with scoring with them because they're scoring all over the secondary. So now they're trying to run the football just to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. Patrick Mahomes, by the way, hasn't played the greatest football to his own credit either. But I'm not discrediting the move. I think it's a good move still, but I feel like that there could have been a move made in a different spot that probably would have helped the run defense a little bit more. But you make a great point with basically counteracting, speed rush, good pass rush does disguise the secondary.
Sure. And as I mentioned, there's a lot of different ways that the defense could be improved. They don't have a lot of capital. They don't have a lot of money to spend. I mean, that was always going to be an issue for the Chiefs, as with how much money they have tied up in, a number of players. A lot of the guys that we're talking about, Chris Jones, Frank Clark, getting paid a lot of money. Obviously, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, so on and so forth, all the offensive lines. So not a lot that they could do. So I think for the 6th round pick, it's a good use of resources, but I do agree. It's not like all of a sudden you feel confident that the defense is solved, right? I mean, there's still a huge question mark and it needs to improve over the rest of the season. Mitch, just a few other things, not trades, but maybe some rumors. So obviously Deshaun Watson doesn't get moved. Ultimately, Miami backs out because of the pending litigation, which is no surprise. It made zero sense that any team would risk future draft capital and future assets for the potential of this guy never playing a down of football ever again. Like, before knowing how that was going to shake out, it made zero sense for anyone to trade for him at this moment, and nobody did. Houston will hold on to Deshaun Watson until at least the offseason, and we'll see by the offseason if, any of this, criminal investigation, if any of this advances any further, if we have any more information and how that affects Deshaun Watson moving forward, we'll see. But he stays put for now. it makes sense. Nobody should have traded for Deshaun Watson. That would have made zero sense. So he stays put. And now, again, we just sort of wait, and it'll be a couple more months till he even can be moved. And we'll see, you know, where it's at come February, March.
Yeah. I mean, I think any sort of trade conversation surrounding Deshaun Watson, just table it. Because, you know, nothing's going to get solved until, like you said, this whole criminal thing gets resolved in some sort of way, or, you know, at least what direction it's headed. I mean, yeah, it really is just a wait and see game with Deshaun Watson, because this all these allegations are kind of moving a little bit slower than what we thought they were going to move. And there's just he's got no value if he can't play. I mean, he's dead weight. He's dead weight right now. And so, you know, the Texans are going to have a really hard time trying to move a guy with dead weight if you know, he's not going to be able to contribute to any team. So
absolutely. Absolutely. The final rumor, I thought this was interesting. Been quite a bit of drama with this. Odell Beckham Jr., you know, it hasn't really gone well for him in Cleveland. There's like clear, I don't know if it's chemistry, the issue between him and Baker Mayfield. Baker just does not target him. And Baker plays better, and the offense looks better when OBJ is not on the field. It's just a fact. Like, you can look at the raw numbers, you can compare them. It moves better without OBJ. And at the trade deadline, there were inquiries about OBJ, specifically Odell Beckham Jr. and the New Orleans Saints. Ultimately, both sides reportedly could not come to a workable deal given how much OBJ is owed the rest of the year. The New Orleans Saints have $0 in cap space. They have basically no wiggle room. So they would have needed, you know, to pay, you know, like the Rams did, you know, maybe attach some extra draft capital to keep that money on the books in Cleveland, or find a way to make that work, which clearly they weren't willing to do. It's an interesting exercise, Mitch, because for the Saints, as a team that's, you know, kind of in this playoff picture in the NFC, adding a weapon like OBJ would only help. For the Browns to keep him, you know, what the future with those two are, maybe he's a guy on the move in the offseason, but it's a weird situation with him in Cleveland right now. And it really is true. Like, you can look at the numbers. Baker is better, and that offense is better when he's not on the field. And it's the wildest thing. He's still a good receiver, right? Like, is he still a good receiver? This isn't like an OBJ is a problem. What is this? Help me walk through this. I don't know what's going on.
You know, it's a weird, this is weird because, like, you would think that the more weapons you could possibly give your quarterback, the better. But it's almost like a too many cooks in the kitchen situation at wide receiver for Baker Mayfield. It's like his brain freezes when he has too many good guys to throw to. And that's on Baker. That's not on Odell by any means, by the way. Like, you know, that's on Baker I truly think it's his fault when Odell's on the field and all of a sudden he's worse. Because anyone would love to have Odell Beckham as their wide receiver one, let alone really at times the wide receiver two in this offense with the Browns, because Jarvis Landry is such a prominent part of that offense. So I don't know. Odell's got to get out of Cleveland. I mean, really what this comes down to, and we'll talk about Baker here in a little bit specifically, but like Odell, I think, is just going to be better suited finding somewhere else other than Cleveland. I think it was in theory when he left New England, or when he left New England, left New York and went to Cleveland. I think in theory it was a great idea because they had something, they were building something there. That doesn't necessarily mean you're always going to see it come to fruition, or be a part of the fruition. Maybe you're part of the building process. Odell, I think, is going to be a part of the building process, not going to be a part of the total success there, because I think he's just better suited going somewhere else where he can be a definitive wide receiver one. Whether that's a place like Las Vegas, whether that's a place, you know, if New Orleans were to free up some cap space like New Orleans, I mean, he's an LSU guy. go back to Louisiana and play in New Orleans. You know, there are endless opportunities for Odell. I think anyone would be happy to have him, but I think Cleveland is just the wrong spot for him.
Yeah, I just think it's a fit thing. You know, I was listening to a podcast this week. I don't remember which one it is, but they're talking about this sort of issue and Baker Mayfield not wanting to throw over the middle of the field. It's not where he feels most comfortable. He's not the biggest guy, right? Stature wise, he's not that tall. The middle of the field's not really where he likes. He's
Russell Wilson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and Russ is the same, you know, same sort of situation. He likes to throw towards the sidelines, likes those outbreaking routes, corner routes, that kind of thing. Odell Beckham's at his best on that quick slant across the middle of the field. So perhaps it is just a situation where this guy, what he does best, does not fit with what your quarterback does best. And you need to find a wide receiver that fits with what your quarterback needs. And this guy's got to find a quarterback who fits with what he needs. And that might ultimately just might be what it comes down to with Odell and Baker Mayfield. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But he's sticking in Cleveland for now. We'll see how this second half goes for Cleveland, as it's been an up and down first half. And we'll get into that Pittsburgh Cleveland game here in a little bit. Mitch, let's move on past the NFL trade deadline. A bit of a somber news today coming out of Las Vegas, where Henry Ruggs is facing felony charges of driving under the influence of alcohol, resulting in death and reckless driving, reportedly crash into a rear-ended a vehicle. The person in that other vehicle passed away. Ruggs showed signs of impairment, the police stated, when they arrived on the scene. It is just such a frustrating thing to see, you know, this sort of situation when there's so many options and ways that you can get yourself home if you are in this situation. The situation where Henry Ruggs was, and he chooses to drive, and somebody has to lose their life for that decision. It is unfortunate, you know. It's horrible for the person who's passed, and their families and loved ones, and for Henry Ruggs, who now faces a long road ahead of him. Who knows what his future is? But just a shitty situation, a shitty thing to see. It's just frustrating, and it sucks. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've known multiple people that have either lost their own life or have been in situations like that where, you know, they cost other people their lives and or have ruined their life because of their decision to get behind the wheel after they've, you know, after they're impaired. And it's just a selfish thing to do. There are so many other options that you have to make sure that you get home safely, because a lot of people don't understand that you're not just taking a risk on your own self, you're risking everyone else, innocent people's well-beings and lives, because of your selfish the decision to get behind the wheel after a night of drinking or whatever it is when you're impaired. So an absolute, tragedy for the family that lost their loved one, thoughts and prayers to them. But you know, this is, I'm pretty sure this is the right way to say this, but it is a Class B felony in the state of Nevada. So that's anywhere between 2 to 20 years in prison. So Henry Ruggs, if found guilty, is looking at some serious time. And he should, because this is a very serious thing. And it costs someone their life, and it costs their loved ones time with that person. So, you know, I hope it gets exercised to the extent of the law. And I think that if anything, the NFL should look at this, and the players in the NFL and anyone just in or out of sports should look at this as a true example of what can happen. With, you know, you not just ruin someone else's life, but you ruin your own as well.
Yeah. A somber reminder, right, of of just how dangerous that is, how selfish and reckless that decision can be, and ultimately how costly. You know, and I think that's where we'll leave it. As far as the football side of this, I think, you know, this is, I think the impact of this on a human aspect is more important than how it affects the Raiders on the football field. And we Absolutely. Can get into that, you know, at a different time. Mitch, we do have to update the people, as we do every week, on our favorite team, the Seattle Kraken.
Oh, hold on.
Uh-oh, we've got a costume change.
Let's go, baby. Let's go, Kraken.
The hat has been replaced with the Seattle Kraken. You love to see it, Mitch. Our guys, couple more wins, slowly but surely, 3-6-1 on the season for the Seattle Kraken. And you know what? Still playing hard, right? Got it. Like I said, couple more wins, but you're still playing hard in these games. We beat the Wild after beating the Canadiens. Some back-to-back wins. Not bad. Next game, Thursday night against the Sabres. So, you know, got a stretch ahead of us, but so far, so good. We just got to keep sort of, you know, chugging away, getting wins here and there. Keep being consistent. That's what we like to see.
Hey, the tortoise won the race in that story, I believe, right?
Hey, so that is true.
If we just keep it slow and steady, it's a long season. Okay, it's our first season. So we're not even expecting a whole lot out of our boys, that we expect continuous growth out of the Kraken. I love your background, by the way. Our boy Brandon Tanev.
Yes.
Crazy eyes Brandon Tanev. Yes,
we've told you to look at his profile headshot on ESPN if you haven't. I put it as my Zoom background to terrify Mitch when I just want him to have to give a take and stare that man in the eyes. It is a wild thing to see. But you know, Mitch, they're you know, Kraken at the bottom of the Pacific Division in the Western Conference right now, tied with Kings and the Canucks in points, but just 1 point back of the Golden Knights, 2 points back of the Anaheim Ducks. So we're right there. We're doing okay. We're not falling. You know, Arizona, the Coyotes, they're 0-8-1, Mitch. They haven't even won a game yet. I mean, geez, we could be that. So, hey, Kraken, not the worst in the league. I see that as an absolute win. It's only up from here, baby.
Hey, yeah. Get that Jacob DeCord guy out between the sticks, by the way.
Yeah. That guy stinks. I'm with you. Get him out of here.
That was five goals allowed. Against the Oilers. Scott.
Get out of here. We're
learning about hockey as we go, right?
We are.
I didn't realize that goalies were almost like pitchers in baseball.
You can rotate. Yeah, it's not just one guy.
They get wins and losses almost. Mm-hmm. It's like, that just intrigued me. I was like, oh, well, I'm going to be a goalie guy. I'm a big goalie guy now.
Mitch is going to be the NHL goalie expert here on the podcast. You'll love to see it. Keep learning, Mitch. Keep doing that research. That is great. Let's move on to the World Series, Mitch. Game 6 tonight between the Astros and the Braves in Houston for Game 6. Braves went up 3-1 in this series, Mitch. Split games in Houston. Braves taking Game 1, Astros winning Game 2. Braves get back-to-back wins, Game 3, Game 4, up 3-1, chance to steal. But the Astros' bats came to life, 9-5 win in Game 5. And now they're back in Houston. Astros got to win two straight games. Braves got to win one. It's an interesting predicament that we're in. Mitch, what are your thoughts on this series up until this point?
I mean, a classic. I mean, if this goes to Game 7, it's a classic. This is one of the best World Series we've seen in a long time. Game 4, huge knocks from Dansby Swanson. Huge knock from Eddie Rosario. I mean, this team just looks... They're a team of destiny. They are a team of destiny, this Atlanta Braves team. A team that, you know, that a few years ago, we thought we were too early on. You're like, we might be a little bit early on the Braves because they're young and they're growing. They've added some fantastic veteran pieces in Travis d'Arnaud and Adam Duvall, along with their young pieces of Dansby Swanson, Ozzy Albies. They've done this without what's his face?
Ronald Acuna.
Yeah. Just blanked out on that name. They added a guy like Jock Peterson, another big bat. I know you love Jock.
He's been great.
From the Dodgers.
The blonde hair is a horrible look. Listen, you know, it's all awful. It's disgusting, but hey, you got to respect it.
You got to.
He's playing great baseball, so that's all that matters.
Yeah. I mean, great bullpen. Great bullpen contributions. Tyler Matzek has been absolutely fantastic out of this bullpen. This seems like a team of destiny. And if, you know, I think the Braves close it out tonight. Right now they are in the top of the third, still tied 0-0. I think the Braves close it out tonight, but if it goes to game seven, this is an all-time classic World Series.
Yeah. In my opinion, the Braves have to get it done tonight if they want to win. If you give the Astros a chance at home in a game seven, having come back from the 3-1 deficit to tie it up, win or go home, like you don't want to be in that situation. Got to get it done tonight. Don't give them that game seven. And I will say, though, different circumstances, but the Braves have just seen this situation the previous round in the NLCS. Up 3-1 on the Dodgers. Dodgers get that game five win to extend the series. That time they go to Atlanta and Atlanta wins that home game in game six. Braves have a chance to close out this series in game six, but this time they've got to do it on the road in the World Series against the Astros. We'll see if they can do it. I'm with you, though. It does feel like Atlanta is that team of destiny. You know, and if this is the Astros losing this series, man, tough break to go up a team of destiny in 2021 with the Atlanta Braves and a team of destiny in 2019. The Washington Nationals, man, Astros got to be sweating if you see anybody out of the NL East. Don't see the Phillies. I hope the Phillies and the Mets don't make any runs because they haven't been able to get past them. So we'll see how the rest of this plays out, Mitch. But it has been a great series, as you mentioned. Glad to see it, you know, extend to at least game six here tonight. And we'll see how the rest of this game shakes out. To finish off the news, we're going to incorporate a weekly segment into our news. Three NBA storylines that we're watching, that we're interested in. And few games into the season, you know, a couple weeks into the season, early on. But there's a player, my first storyline that I want to start off here with, Mitch. A player that has, in my opinion, clearly made the leap in year three. A guy who we saw in the playoffs for the first time in his young career last year and put up a valiant effort in the first round, showed that potential, reminded me of the young star he was playing against in that game. And he's making that year three leap just like Donovan Mitchell did. And I'm talking about Ja Morant. Ja Morant's averaging 28.3 points per game, 5.4 rebounds, 7.7 assists. He's third in the NBA in scoring at 28 points a game. Seventh in assists, 7.7 assists a game. And he is looking like that playoff Ja Morant that we saw last year against the Utah Jazz. He is clearly showing that he is taking the leap and that he is an all-star guard in the Western Conference. And it's great because he is one of the best young players in the league, one of the guys you just want to root for. He's a great kid. Yeah, he's a great player. That Memphis team is young and scrappy, and they've rallied around their leader, Ja Morant, and he is going to carry them to even greater heights this year. And I think he's an all-star player. So Ja Morant, one of the early stars of this NBA season to me.
Yeah, I mean, the leap in points per game, averaging almost 10 points a game more than the year before, averaging almost playing better defense, averaging almost a steal more per game. His rebounds have gone up offensively and defensively. He's shooting the ball better.
Yep. 38% from three, that is above average. Is it 36% about average? 38% is pretty good.
He's career 32.5.
He's a 38.5. That's a huge jump.
I mean, round up to 39. Let's just give him the benefit of the doubt here. You know, he's shooting the ball at a better clip, almost a 3% better clip overall from the field. He's playing more minutes. This guy's continuing to is starting to grow into a guy that you put a team on their back. And not to say that he is that guy right now, but he is slowly becoming that guy because, man, he has absolutely come out of the gates red hot, and he's so talented. I don't think that we can expect him to slow down.
No, I mean, he is only just going to get better. That's the thing. John Morant is not close to the player he's going to truly become yet. So the fact that he's doing this in year three just shows the type of player that we're talking about here. This could be a top five player in the NBA. I mean, he's that good, and he's proving that early on in his career. Mitch, one of the biggest surprises as far as teams this season, a team that we discussed in our NBA preview, what tier did they reach in? Were they going to be a playoff team? How are the new acquisitions going to mesh? The Chicago Bulls, best record in the Eastern Conference, 6-1. Only loss coming to the New York Knicks. They're looking good, Mitch. They're looking really good. The defense, top notch. Lonzo Ball, Alex Caruso. These guys are great defenders at the guard position. Patrick Williams, an athletic. I know he's a little banged up right now. Athletic wing. DeMar DeRozan, 25 points a game. Zach LaVine, 25 points a game. Both those guys can put up buckets. The pieces around them, I think, are meshing pretty well so far. Chicago, I mean, they look pretty good. Why? They've been the most impressive team to start this season. Outside of, I think the Jazz have been impressive to me, but they did this last year, right? So it's not a surprise to see them starting off so hot. The Bulls are the most surprising team playing so well to start.
Yeah, I mean, great defense. Offense has been fantastic. Like you mentioned, DeRozan and LaVine both putting up 25 points a game. This is a team that probably could easily be 7-0 right now if it wasn't for the 1-point loss to the Knicks last Thursday. So a team that's just playing fantastic ball, great defense at the point guard position with Alex Caruso and Lonzo Ball, not even to mention the young Kobe White that's still a part of that rotation as well. So the Bulls coming out red hot to start the year, and I think this is going to be a really good team. We didn't even mention Nikola Vucevic. That's going to be a part of that team, you know, part of that rotation. So a Bulls team coming out hot, red hot, and I don't expect them to slow down because this is a really good team, I think. I think they're legit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it is just a hot start, but you're seeing, again, a lot of new pieces. My biggest question in this, I was kind of hedging on the Bulls. How is it going to fit? Only 7 games in, so we're not, you know, writing the book on the Bulls season yet, but so far, so good. Encouraging signs if you're a Bulls fan. Mitch, you wanted to mention a team from the Western Conference that has surprised you.
Yeah, I've watched two. I'm warming up to the NBA, but so I'm starting to get into more NBA. And there's one team that I get in my area a lot that I've watched a couple games of, and that's the Sacramento Kings. They're 3-3 to start the year right now, 8th in the West. I watched actually 2 losses of theirs. Their 9-point loss to the Jazz on October 22nd and a 6-point loss to the Mavs on Sunday. And I'll tell you what, this team lost to really good teams tight. They played these teams tight. They played them really tough. And I think the Kings are lock them in as a play-in team. Lock them in as a play-in team.
Okay.
I think the Kings will be in the play-in tournament. I really do. I really like this. Now, we talked about the surplus of guards that they have right now with Davion Mitchell, Tyrese Halliburton, De'Aaron Fox, and Buddy Hield being the 4 names there. If they can move one of those guys and Marvin Bagley, I think they need to move Marvin Bagley and get a good post presence, maybe another wing presence that they could shoot the outside ball. They have the defense. They have good facilitators at the point guard position. They play good defense. I think this team could definitely – well, I'm not saying definitely, or I'm not saying could be. They will definitely be a play-in team at the end of the year because I am that confident in how good this young team has come together.
Yeah, you know, I mean, give some credit to Harrison Barnes. 23.3 points per game, 10 rebounds. He's leading the team in scoring. I mean, he's carried an offensive load that, I mean, I wouldn't have expected them, you know, to have. Right now, interesting enough, the rotation – De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, Harrison Barnes, Rashawn Holmes, and Mo Harkless is sort of the starting lineup. Healed Davion Mitchell coming off the bench, but both getting at least 27 minutes a game off the bench. So bringing those two guys off the bench, Buddy Hield averaging 17 points a game right now. So, you know, maybe there's a move down the line to be made for one of these surplus of guards, another piece as it all shakes out. That could still, you know, potentially happen. Marvin Bagley, clearly not in the rotation. He's averaging, he's only played a one game, played 10 minutes. So is that a guy that could be moved for somebody else? You know, how does it all shake out in the end? We'll see, but some early good signs, I think, from the Sacramento Kings, and you're seeing some good play from, you know, young players and continued development and, you know, only encouraging signs for Sacramento. Long season. We'll see if they can break their long playoff drought. But encouraging stuff for Sacramento so far. I'm with you, Mitch.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
All right, Mitch, that's going to do it for the news. Let's get into NFL week 8. Going to touch on a few games from this past week. And let's start with probably the most significant game, one of the best games, Thursday Night Football, Green Bay Packers, Arizona Cardinals. Packers hand the Cardinals their first loss of the season, 24-21. No Devontae Adams in this game. A hodgepodge group of wide receivers for Aaron Rodgers, but a solid run game, great performance by the defense, and Green Bay gets a win on the road. Mitch, I was impressed with the Packers here, who, under all these circumstances, were able to pull out a good win. I saw something, and I don't remember the exact statistic, but I if I remember right, the average depth of target for Aaron Rodgers in this game was like 2.4 yards. Like literally everything was at the line of scrimmage. But that's what you have to do when you're throwing the ball to Juwan Winfrey and Josiah DeGuara and Amari Rodgers. I mean, what other choice does he have? His most targeted receiver and the guy that ended up with the most receptions was Aaron Jones, the running back. I mean, of course, that's who you're going to give the ball to. So they ran the ball well enough. They moved the ball well enough to get this win against the Cardinals. And I think that's a good sign for the Packers, who after that week one, just weird loss to the Saints, getting absolutely destroyed by the Saints in week one, they've won 7 straight games and they've beat some good teams and they've got it done in a number of different ways, just like they did on Thursday night. Impressive for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a bad man and he will find a way to get a win. I think that as a Bears fan who is deeply offended by his comments of I still own you. I think he still owns everyone. I think that it doesn't matter where he goes. He owns them. He gets it done. No matter where he goes, even without his best receiver, one of the best receivers in the NFL and Devontae Adams, he still gets it done. Like we mentioned, you mentioned Juwan Winfrey, his leading wide receiver for the evening, was only 4 for 30 yards. He was able to manufacture a pass offense without Devontae Adams and really just like a load of crap. And then Randall Cobb, because I'm not going to throw Randall Cobb in there. Randall Cobb seems like a sweetheart and he's a good wide receiver 3. But he got it done without his lead receiver. And he threw exactly to who I think we kind of all thought he was going to throw to, which was Aaron Jones out of the backfield. Get the guy open in space, give him the ball and let him do his thing. Impressive win by the Packers against a really good Arizona team that's, you know, praised for their offense, but really has a solid defense behind him as well.
Yeah. And I think the Arizona defense played pretty well. I mean, 24 points to the Packers. Again, no Devontae Adams, but this is still a good offense. And the fact that they ran the ball as well as they did, they had Aaron Rodgers, and you only gave up 24 points. You kept your offense in the game. That's big for the Cardinals defense. 2 interceptions for Kyler Murray. They lost a fumble. So I think 3 turnovers total for the Cardinals in this game. I mean, that is not a recipe to win. You lose the turnover margin 3-0. Time of possession, 37 minutes for the Packers, 22 minutes for the Cardinals. I don't think this is a horrible loss for Arizona by any means. I mean, I just read you all those numbers, right? I mean, over 15 minute differential in the type of possession, 3-0 in the turnover margin, and you lost by a field goal. Yeah, like you had a shot at the end of the game. Despite all that, you averaged 3.7 yards on the ground, 74 yards in the game total rushing. I mean, that is a bad game, but the Cardinals were still in that. So I don't think it's like Cardinals aren't real or they're not what they thought they were. They played a really good team and they lost this one. If this is a playoff matchup in Arizona in the first weekend, maybe Arizona gets this one that time. You know, a little bit of experience. You've seen them before. You get some revenge. It could be a very different game. So I'm not taking much away as far as being worried about the Cardinals. But I do want to ask you, Mitch, and we posed this question on our Sports Hour Instagram stories. If you don't follow us already at the Sports Hour, guys, this is the question we had going into this week. Who is the best team in the NFC? It would have been clearly the Cardinals because they were undefeated, but they've fallen. Now we have a couple teams, one losses. Green Bay has the tiebreaker over Arizona. Who's the best team? We have two responses, so we appreciate the two who responded. Tanner Risk, our good buddy, the fantasy expert himself, a Sports Hour guy, Jordan Fox. Both of them said the Packers.
Of course, Jordan said the Packers.
Well, he said the Packers, obviously. So I guess technically that's what he said. But Mitch, do you agree? Is it the Packers? Is it somebody else? Who is the best team in the NFC?
No, it's not the Packers. It's still Arizona. I think the second best team in the NFC is still the Rams. Look, no one thought that the Cardinals were going to go 17-0. They had to lose somewhere, and they lost to a good team. They lost to a good team, and the Packers are a good team. They were going to lose somewhere along the line, okay? And they're probably going to lose a couple more times, and they're probably going to lose to good teams. But, you know, just the Packers knocking off the only undefeated team left in the NFL doesn't automatically supersede them up and, you know, past those teams and make them the best team in the NFL. You know, the Cardinals lost a game that was a losable game for them because they're playing another really good team. And it goes back to turnovers and time of possession. I guarantee you, if I showed you every game in the NFL, 95%, that's a little bit probably, you know, crazy, but 90% of the time, the team that won the game won the turnover battle and they won the time of possession. I mean, those two things are so big in winning a football game. Can you control the football and can you keep your team from turning the ball over to the other team? Those are huge components into winning a football game, regardless of yardage production and how often, you know, and how little you keep the ball, you know, keep the ball from advancing the other team from advancing the football. This does not make the Packers the best team just because they beat the last undefeated team. For me, it's still the Rams. It's still the Cardinals are the best team in the NFC, and the Rams are second. I'd probably put the Packers third, but right up there with the Bucks. I think the Bucks and the Packers are kind of a debatable thing. But, you know, no, this doesn't make the Packers the best team in the NFL.
Right now, Packers, Cardinals, Rams, all 7-1 on the season. Cowboys, 6-1. Buccaneers 6-2. Mitch, I think the Rams are the best team in the NFC. And I felt like this before the season. I picked the Rams to, advance to the NFC championship game. Ultimately, Aaron Rodgers' revenge tour to the Super Bowl. That's where I'm at. But I've been very high on this Rams team since they traded for Matthew Stafford. And I'm saying this even pre-Von Miller trade, right? Like pre-Von Miller trade, this is still the best team in the NFC to me. The most balanced. It's got a fantastic defense and a fantastic offense. Proven, right, with talent that we know. I think other teams have a little more question marks. Maybe not the Bucks, just because of how much they're bringing back. The sure thing that we know in Tom Brady and just the talent, but they've, you know, the injuries in the secondary for the Bucs is really a detriment to them. How that, you know, factors towards the end of the season, we'll find out. I know the Rams lost the head-to-head with the Cardinals, right? But they do have a head-to-head win over the Buccaneers. They're going to play the Packers November 28th at Green Bay. So we'll get a chance to see Rams and Packers face off. And we're going to see another Cardinals game with the Rams December 13th. So we're going to have a couple chances for these teams to still sort of shake out, especially obviously in the NFC West, but even, you know, within these divisions, you know, we'll see how this plays out. But I'm going to say Rams, and then I would go Green Bay, and then I would go Arizona, just because Arizona, and it's not just because of the loss. It's still the question of, we haven't seen them advance. We haven't seen them prove they can do it yet, right? Like they faltered. They lost three of their last four, I think, last year to miss the playoffs. I mean, they should have been in the playoffs last year, right? So until I see them pull it off, make that playoff run, show that level of consistency, I'm going to defer to the teams that we've seen do it before, like LA and like Green Bay.
I think that last year argument for me goes a lot further when you have teams with established pieces. I think that Arizona brought in a lot of new pieces. They had a lot of young pieces. And so when you saw them falter, okay, this team hasn't quite figured it out as a unit now. If we saw the Rams or the Packers do that year, if we saw the Rams or the Packers do that, then it's like, well, now I need to see it, because this is a team that's established together, that's been together. Maybe the Rams aren't the best thing because now they're at a new quarterback situation. But if we saw the Packers or the Buccaneers do that, then it would be like they did that last year, but they're still the team that they are. I think that the Cardinals really are the best team because we haven't, you know, we saw them do that, but that wasn't with any sort of established unit still. They were still kind of figuring that whole thing out. So, but I respect the Cardinals still in the top three, but you know, I got to put them number one still, because I mean, this has been the most explosive team in football for me.
Sure. Fair enough. And you know, if the doubt was about the Arizona defense, I think they've proven through 8 games that this is an improved unit. It's an improved unit, and that has put them in this stratosphere of contender. Can they sustain that over the course of the season? We'll find out. Mitch, next game on the slate, a great AFC South matchup between the Titans and the Colts. Titans get it done in Indianapolis in overtime, 34-31, a horrendous interception by Carson Wentz in overtime that just gifted the Tennessee Titans the win, put them immediately in field goal range. After the Colts defense got a stop on the Titans offense, it gave the offense an opportunity to just go down the field, get in field goal range, kick it, and go home. And Carson Wentz happened. So, Mitch, let's start on the Titans side of things here. At 6-2, and having already secured 2 wins over the Colts, the Titans have essentially locked up the AFC South. Now, it's only a 3-game lead over the Colts, but as mentioned with the tiebreakers, the Colts would have to gain 4 games on the Tennessee Titans. I know there's no Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's going to miss a significant amount of time. Adrian Peterson is coming in. I don't think that's going to look great, but hear me out on this, Mitch. They have the Rams in LA this week. Tough, tough matchup. Saints the next week, not easy either. You get the Texans twice, the Jaguars, the Dolphins. Those 4 games are still on the schedule. No Derrick Henry or not, those seem like 4 wins to me. And you're at 10. And if you're at 10 wins, there's basically no way the Colts can get to 11 at this point. They'd have to win out. So you've essentially locked up as long as they can clean up against those bad teams, the Tennessee is going to be set. Are they, with the Henry injury, are they going to be competing for that bye in the AFC potentially? I don't think so. I think that's going to hurt them. When you're looking at the Saints, the Rams, Patriots at Patriots, November 28th, still got the Steelers, still got the Niners. There's some tough games there. Derrick Henry helps a lot in that case. So Titans locked up the AFC South. I don't know. You know, this Henry injury is just going to be tough as far as the AFC number one seed goes, trying to get that bye week. But the Titans cannot worry about the division now. They pretty much cleared that obstacle with that win on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the big games there, the Saints, the Patriots, the Niners, the Rams. I mean, those are games where you need to run the ball well. And with Derrick Henry not there, that's going to be tough to do. Derrick Henry, the loss of Derrick Henry really, really hurts the Tennessee Titans. But like you said, outside of those 5 games, the remaining schedule, if they can get to 10 wins, and I don't think Indianapolis is getting to 11. So, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's weird to say that a team is locked up a division after week eight, but I think they have. I think they really have. And it's you know, they're going to patch the run game up. Like you said, Adrian Peterson coming into Tennessee, which is ugly. You got Donta Foreman, I think, as at least signed to the practice squad. I don't know if he's on the active roster, but he does kind of what Derrick Henry does, which is like a power football, a power run type thing. He's not a finesse guy. So if you still want to run in between the tackles and give him 6-7 touches a carry inside the 20, then sure, whatever. But Ryan Tannehill is really going to have to step up, and the defense is going to have to step up and really play well down the stretch. I do want to give a quick shout out our boy, Jeff Swaim, 4 for 23 in the touchdown this week. So, shout out to Jeff for getting it done this week, getting in the end zone.
Well done. Would have been a great start in fantasy at tight end if you had the galls to start Jeff Swaim, which you likely didn't, but you would have got 12 points out of him. You play fantasy, you know, you'll take that at tight end. You'll absolutely take that.
Yeah.
Mitch, I think I want to ask you, are you surprised with the news that Henry goes out, you surprised that the Titans didn't make a move in the trade market for a running back? We would have suspected and known that guys like Melvin Gordon would have been available. Maybe a Mike Davis in Atlanta becoming available. There were a couple names floating around where if you really believed in this Titans team, and at 6-2 with the way the AFC has shaked out, the Chiefs don't look, you know, they're record wise, they're not up there quite as they were, you know, you got the Bills, but you have a tiebreaker over the Bills. If you're Tennessee, you can really legitimately have a shot at this number one seed. If you made a push, is there any thought to making a move for a guy like that? And you know what, when he comes back healthy, obviously Henry's the guy, but couldn't hurt to have Melvin Gordon too. Like, is there any thought to that? Are you surprised that they didn't go that route?
I guess, now that we talk about it, maybe a little bit. I guess I'm not surprised. I think that Tennessee kind of had maybe a little bit of a thought of the general public of this guy's indestructible. You know, this guy can't go down. This guy, he's Superman. He can't get hurt. Well, now he's hurt, and you're stuck without Derrick Henry, and you're having to sign Adrian Peterson. You know, a guy like Melvin Gordon would have been nice to have. A guy like Mike Davis would have been nice to have. Because now you're going to be stuck without Derrick Henry for an extended period of time. So maybe I wasn't shocked that they didn't make a move, but now I guess in hindsight, you're like, they should have made a move that could at least alleviate some of the workload off Derrick Henry, even if he was healthy going into the playoffs, alleviate some of the workload when you knew you're locked up in the division.
It certainly would feel, it'd make us feel more confident, right, that they could continue to win games at this pace without Derrick Henry. Now we'll see how, you know, Peterson and Foreman and McNichols, who they, you know, have on the roster. He's kind of the guy there. You know, we'll see how the carries shake out, but
they might have been better off with Deion Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good after Derrick Henry, right? And so ultimately, when you have a team that's so centered around one guy doing something at a high level, when you don't have that guy, how does it look? Can Tannehill carry the team? Good to see AJ Brown back, 10 receptions, 155 yards, touchdown. No Julio in this game. Having him and AJ Brown healthy is going to be key for them keeping this pace moving forward. For the Colts, Mitch, yes, they're out of the division race, likely, right? We've talked about this. You've got to get four games above the Titans. You're 3-5 right now, so you can only lose essentially, you know, one or two more games, maybe. But I don't think the Colts are necessarily out of the wild card by any means. I still think the Colts are a pretty decent team. The defense has not been what we thought it was this year. And 34 points to the Titans, that's evidence of that. Now, they did stop the run, but still gave up 34 points. This is tough scenes. Indianapolis, Jonathan Taylor's been pretty good, but has struggled at times. I think Carson Wentz has been okay. I don't think Carson Wentz has been the issue for them this year so far. 3-5, I don't think it's been Carson Wentz has played poorly, and that's why we haven't won games. I think the defense has been more at blame, for the most part, in this season so far. Colts at 3-5. You know, you're going to get the Jets, two games against the Jaguars still, another game against the Texans still. So, you know, there's some easy wins out there and some tough matchups against the Bills, the Bucks, the Cardinals still on the schedule. But I don't think the Colts are necessarily out of it as far as the wild card with seven teams coming out of each conference. They're still in that, but they've got to start winning, got to get above 500, and just got to get more consistent on defense. Help that offense out, help Carson Wentz out.
Yeah, the defense has really been, I think, the finger to point at when it comes to blame. Carson Wentz has thrown 14 touchdowns and only three interceptions. Yeah, he's right.
On Sunday. That was like, I mean, so you think about that. He threw two on Sunday.
Yeah, he's just a shade under 2,000 yards. The only thing is when he throws an interception, they are remarkably bad. Like,
sure.
They are memeable bad, where you you remember that interception because you're like, oh God, you had the one against the Niners last week, and then he had this other one this week against the Titans that were just like, what the hell are you doing? But he hasn't played bad. You know, he's actually played fairly well. He's actually played well. Despite the 3-5 start, it really is the Colts defense. They have to play more consistent. Jonathan Taylor, I think, has to get a little bit more going on the ground game, and you could attribute that to a little bit of the offensive line. Sure. I know Carson Wentz
issues along the offensive line to start this season. Yeah. I know Quentin Nelson, some of those guys are back, but early on missing some of those guys are probably not 100%.
Sure. And I think that, you know, the having a more solidified run game will contribute to even more Carson Wentz success. So the Colts aren't in a bad spot, but they are in a spot where they need to, okay, it's not panic time, but it's time to go. So we need to pick it up a little bit and maybe gain a few games and maybe sneak into a wild card here.
Yeah, at 3-5, you can't afford any more losses. Time to dig yourself out of the hole, get some wins, you know, try to get things back on track and be in a position to fight for a wild card spot at the end of the season. Mitch, final game here, AFC North matchup, Steelers at Browns. Pittsburgh gets the victory 15-10. An ugly game, an ugly quarterback matchup. Ben Roethlisberger, Baker, both of them pretty subpar in this game. Mitch, this AFC North is just absolutely wild right now. Ravens had the bye and moved into first place because the Bengals lost. Baltimore 5-2, Cincinnati 5-3, Pittsburgh 4-3, Cleveland 4-4. Mitch, the Browns were supposed to be a Super Bowl contender this year. We thought that they were going to be right up there with the Chiefs and the Ravens and the Bills. You know, when you talk about those teams at the AFC, we expected to be there. That was kind of the four teams. What happened? Is it time to worry about the Browns? Will they figure it out? What's going on, Mitch? Is it time to hit the panic button? Like, where are we at on Cleveland? 4-4 in their first eight games.
It sure is time to hit the panic button on the offense. I think that Baker's a prima donna. Baker wants to do everything himself. He wants to be the head of the show, I think, right now. And he's got to know when to take a step back. He's been playing hurt. I mean, this guy's been banged up. I feel like he's been banged up half the year and kind of playing through these little tiny things. Sometimes maybe you need, you know, I think you just need to take a week or two off. Yeah, Case Keenum back there, which isn't a terrible option to have as your backup quarterback. That's he's competent. Let Case play. Take a few weeks off and be healthy. We talked about the OBJ stuff where, you know, he plays better with OBJ out of the lineup. I don't know. The offense is just so confusing. You know they want to run the football, but you feel like they also want to throw the football, but they're also not very good at it because Baker's not throwing the football very well right now. So I think this just adds on to our argument of last week. I believe it was last week where we said that Baker's not going to be the starter in Cleveland right now or next year. I got to stand by that. I don't know if he's a starter somewhere else or he's a backup in Cleveland, but based off the play and the kind of the confusion of what the Cleveland offense is, when we thought we had a very good idea of what Cleveland's offense was at the end of last year, I think we got to really reassess, is Baker starting caliber? And I think this just feeds into our argument of Baker's not going to be the starting quarterback next year.
Yeah. Again, kind of what we discussed last week, it just seems like there's clear limitations. You know, as far as the season, I don't think it's lost for them. You look ahead at their schedule and
it's not lost.
You know, they're going to have an opportunity to determine, they're going to determine their own fate here in their schedule. They've got both their games against Cincinnati, both their games against Baltimore, and one more game against the Steelers on the schedule. So five of their six divisional games still upcoming. You know, you play well in those divisional games, you're going to earn wins, and you're also going to cause those teams ahead of you to earn some losses. And ultimately, that's going to be the difference in this season for Cleveland. You know, mixed bag. Other than that, you know, you've got some tougher matchups against like the Packers and the Raiders. You also have the Lions on the schedule, but really it's going to come down to those two games against Cincinnati, those two games against Baltimore, that final game against Pittsburgh. How do you play within the division? If you can win those games, you're going to be in the division race and you're going to be in the playoff race. If you can't get it done there, it's going to be a disappointing season in Cleveland. And if it's a disappointing playoff missing season, then there's going to be some changes, Mitch, and you best believe it. It's probably going to start with Baker Mayfield. So tenuous point of the season for Cleveland. Got to start turning things around. It starts this week against the Bengals. So, you know, chance right now to get back on track in the division. Mitch, that's going to do it for the NFL Week 8 recap. Let's take a quick break, hit the mid-roll, and when we come back, the campus tour, and then our quick picks to wrap up the pod. So stick around, and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that
and
you know better
Sports Hour
than
Mitch
me
going
and Mitchmo.
It is time.
Moral of the story, the people, be tour. More like Sammy and
we
David.
Find a fight
go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for?
This is our brand new one, and it's awesome. It's fun. College football is so exciting, and it's an exciting time for college football right now because we just had the release of the college football playoff rankings. First time that these have been released this season. We're going to focus on the top 10 right now. Georgia, the clear consensus number one overall ranking. Alabama. Oh, wait. Whoop. Sorry.
Got to put the hat back on.
Roll damn tide. We got the Alabama Crimson Tide at number two. The Michigan State Spartans, number three. Oregon, four. Those are your four playoff teams as of right now. On the outside, looking in, Ohio State at five, Cincinnati at six, Michigan at seven, Oklahoma at eight, Wake Forest at nine, and Notre Dame at 10. Dallin, there is a clear and obvious travesty here, and I just want you to take the floor and go with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly the disrespect and disregard for the non-Power 5 teams by the playoff committee. And it has been a consistent trend. Think back to those great UCF teams from a few years ago. 12-0 didn't matter. Eighth was the highest that UCF ever reached in the college playoff rankings. And now here we see Cincinnati. Last year, the highest they reached was seventh. Seventh. This year, they're consistent 8-0. Went on the road against a top 10 team in Notre Dame. You beat Indiana, another Power 5 team. That's what the committee asked for. Beat some good teams on the road. Cincinnati, number two in the AP poll. And number six in the college football playoff rankings. Mitch, if you are not going to ever put a non-Power 5 team in the college football playoff. Just say it. Just make it abundantly clear that a Group of 5 team can never, under any circumstance, no matter what they do, will never make the college football playoff. If they beat every team on their schedule by 40 points, unless they're a Power 5 team playing a Power 5 schedule, they'll never make it. If that's the truth, which it seems so evident that it is, considering that Cincinnati, in a year that we've had, when there's not clearly four better teams than Cincinnati, even in a year like that, they can't get any credit. They can't have any shot to be in at number four, just number four right now. Let's explore the idea that if Cincinnati wins out, they should be in the playoff. No, Cincinnati, you're at number six, and guess what? Everybody else over the rest of the season is only going to get better wins than you. There's nothing you can do. The best win you could have had on the rest of your schedule, SMU, guess what? They were disrespected too. Top 20 team in the AP poll, nowhere to be found in the college playoff rankings, which means that when Cincinnati beats SMU down the line, it won't matter. It's not a good win because we don't think they're a good team and we don't think you're a good team. If you're not invited, just make it clear so that the Group of Five can stop wasting its time trying to get invited to this party that you're just not going to allow them to get into. It's absurd, Mitch. It is absurd. And it just takes the fun away from this process, which should be fun and exciting. It is no longer fun and exciting. It's a farce. It's a farce.
I mean, this is the difference between college football and college basketball, where you see, you know, other teams that are outside top, you know, Power 5
Gonzaga can be the number one seed in all of March Madness. It doesn't matter that they played Pepperdine twice a year. If they're the best team in college basketball, they're the best team, and we're gonna give them that credit.
And this is that, and that's the difference between the committee of football and the committee for college basketball, is that the fairness, I guess fairness is, for lack of a better term, is there in college basketball. It's not in college football. Cincinnati is so, just so deeply disrespected in this. You know, they have done everything that the voting committee could have absolutely asked for. And they still have one of those games on ahead of them, playing 20 right now, currently number 23 SMU. And they're still going to rank them number six. They're better than Ohio State. I'll say it right now. Cincinnati is better than Ohio State. Cincinnati is better than Oregon. Cincinnati can compete with Michigan State. And you know what? Cincinnati's going to compete with the Tide. Cincinnati's going to compete with the Tide as well. I mean, this is a good football team. To disrespect the job that they have done over there in Cincinnati, Desmond Ritter has been absolutely fantastic since he showed up in Cincinnati. I mean, why not just have your own Group of Five rankings now? Just, you have your Power Five rankings, you have your Group of Five rankings, you have your FCS rankings. Just do that from now on. Because they're not going to be allowed in the power into these playoffs, just put them in their own rankings and you know, be honest with them and say, hey, you're never going to get into this, so we're going to make your own rankings. You can have your own playoff system. I'm with you. This is so frustrating that Cincinnati isn't even. It's not even like they're fifth. Like fifth would have even been like, I wouldn't even been as outraged. But the fact that they're outside the top four is just absolutely absurd. They're better than this Oregon team that they put number four.
Yeah, they're better than Oregon and they're better than Ohio State. I absolutely agree with you. They at least deserve to be ahead of them at this very moment because they are undefeated and Oregon and Ohio State are not. And Cincinnati has a win against a team.
Oregon plays in the Pac-12.
They lost to Stanford. Stanford sucks.
Is arguably one of the weaker conferences in all the Power Five.
It absolutely is the weakest Power Five conference. ACC is making a hell of a strong argument right now with them as well, but traditionally, with Clemson being as good as they, you know, usually are, the ACC at least has that. The Pac-12 is a joke, and the fact that they have Oregon ahead of them is nuts. Mitch, it's not just the disrespect to Cincinnati. There were like four or five Group of Five teams that are ranked right now in the AP polls that did not appear in the college football playoff rankings. There's only three group of five teams, four if you count BYU, which you can kind of count BYU. They're not really a group of five. They're not a power five either. They're an independent. They're kind of in the middle. They're going to be power five soon. Take them out. Cincinnati in the AAC, Fresno State at number 23, and San Diego State at number 24, both in the Mountain West. Those, that's it. That's all the group of five representation. No UTSA, currently number 16 in the AP poll, undefeated, 8-0, the Roadrunners. They're nowhere to be found in this. There's no SMU, as you mentioned. There's no Coastal Carolina.
Wisconsin's 21.
Wisconsin.
Oh, a three-loss team.
5-3, and they're
a three-loss team is in the top 25 in the college playoff rankings. Oh,
it's absurd, and you know that, and that's where I say if there's no chance for them to get in, then just say it. Just say it. Just be clear about it, and let's move on, and let's figure something else out. Then let's stop pretending. All, you know, up until this point in the first week of November that Cincinnati ever had a shot at the playoff, because we did. Everyone believed it. Everyone believed that this would be a year that Cincinnati would fight a group of five team would finally have a shot on the out from the outside. Cincinnati going to be a Big 12 team in a couple years. They're going to be at the table in a couple years. Finally, the committee's going to give them their credit and put them in, and they're at six. And again, I know they're at six, and you might think, well, you know, you just get up to four. Every other team ahead of them, and even the teams behind them, are only going to have opportunities to pass them. Cincinnati is not going to have any opportunities to move up unless everyone around them loses multiple games. I mean, you have to go undefeated if you're Cincinnati, but unless teams start losing two games, if Oregon's a two-loss team, if Ohio State's two-loss, if Alabama's two-loss, like then maybe you have a shot. But everybody else is just going to be in a better spot. Mitch, outside of Cincinnati, any last thoughts on Cincinnati? Then go ahead.
It's not Cincinnati. We have a new entry into the pit of misery.
Oh, I love it.
It is the College Football Playoff Voting Committee.
They should have been in there before.
I mean, yes. I mean, I don't know how they lasted this long without getting in. They're in. They're in for keeping Cincy out of the college football playoffs. I mean, and you know, this isn't even, they're a repeat offender. They're a repeat offender.
This is not their first offense. Yes. I mean, they've consistently done stupid stuff. So I love this, Mitch. I'm 100% on board. Dilly dilly.
The playoff committee for college football is in the pit of misery.
Yeah. Real quick, I think, as far as the top four goes, Georgia, Michigan State, both 8-0, absolutely should be in there. I understand Alabama being in there. 7-1, only loss coming to number 14, Texas A&M. And other than that, they've been dominant Alabama, just as we suspected. One close loss to Texas A&M aside, they've been really good. Oregon, do not understand in the top four, obviously, but I do respect and I am glad that they are ranked ahead of Ohio State because of the head-to-head that they have against Ohio State. If the committee's going to honor head-to-head, which they said that they will, head-to-head matchup matters, well, then you need to rank Oregon ahead of Ohio State, and they did. So I'm happy about that. I found it interesting, Mitch, in the top 10, that two undefeated Power 5 teams were ranked all the way back at 8-9 in Oklahoma and Wake Forest, respectively. 9-0 Oklahoma, 8-0 Wake Forest. They have not played very strong schedules. They haven't really had any impressive wins, either of them. The committee has never not chosen an undefeated Power 5 team to make the college football playoff in the college football playoff era. But there's a serious question that if Wake Forest were to go 12-0, 13-0, whatever it is with the ACC championship, if they play nobody and nobody's very good, we saw Pitt fall off. They came in at what, number 25. That's the only other ACC team. If they just, you know, go through a below average conference and get to 12-0, would the committee put an 11-1 Ohio State or, you know, a Cincinnati ahead of them? You know, who else? It's a curious situation. The fact that they're at number 9 is not a good sign for the Demon Deacons. And they're going to need some impressive wins moving forward to move up. Same with Oklahoma.
I think that there's only two teams in the ACC that could possibly get that vote if they were undefeated and get into the college football playoff. And I think that's Clemson. And I think that's Miami. because of the pedigree and the past that they have. I think that the college football playoff
voting
committee.
I would add Florida
committee,
State to that, but I agree.
And Florida State. Yeah, you're right. Florida State. And I think it's because of the pedigree that they have and the past they have and the nostalgia, because they want to live in the past. They want to live in the 1990s when, you know, Miami and Florida State were constantly atop of the ACC. They want to live in the last 4 years when Clemson was dominating. They don't want to put Wake Forest there. They don't want to put Wake Forest because what's the sexier team to watch, Wake Forest or Ohio State? Well, they're going to want to watch a one loss Ohio State team over, you know, they're going to say, no, people want to see a one loss Ohio State team against an undefeated over an undefeated Wake Forest team, because Wake Forest isn't the sexy team to pick.
Ohio State's a bigger brand, you know, and ultimately that's what's going to, you know, that's what it's going to move the needle. That's why the group of five is never going to be invited, because they don't move the needle, even though it's great for the sport and it would be the best thing to do. And it might be the right thing to do. Mitch, I do want to give, speaking of Wake Forest here, I want to give them some credit. Entered the AP top 10 this week. They were the last Power Five team to finally be ranked in the AP top 10 in football.
Oh,
they were the last remaining Power Five football team to have never in their history be ranked in the top 10 of the AP poll until this week. Shout out to the Demon Deacons, Sam Hartman at quarterback. Listen, you talk about not being fun to watch. They put up points. I mean, talk about fun to watch. Like, at least you're going to see some points. I mean, go look at the box score from that Army game a couple weeks ago. I mean, holy cow. That is, at least they can, they'll keep putting up points for you.
$33 billion in defense resources spent, and that's what Army can do.
And they're losing to a basketball school. Incredible. But Mitch, just want to make a few more notes about sort of the rest of the top 25 here. I was pleasantly surprised BYU ranked so high here, 15th in the college football playoff rankings, number 17 in the AP polls right now, coming off a big win over Virginia on Saturday night. Last year, undefeated BYU appeared for the first time at 17 in the poll, got as high as I believe 15 or 14 before that loss to Coastal Carolina. So I was surprised. I expected BYU to be somewhere around 20, if I'm being honest, but a lot of credit, I think, to BYU this year for their Power Five schedule that they've played so far through six games, against the Power Five, 5-1 in those games. The only loss coming to Baylor, obviously 4-0 against the Pac-12. So credit to the strong schedule for BYU getting up at 15. It puts them in a position to potentially compete for a New Year's Six Bowl if they can win out and, you know, chaos ensues ahead of them. And then, you know, you mentioned Wisconsin, 5-3. Don't know what they're doing there. Wisconsin is not a good football team. Iowa, the same thing. Why is Iowa? I know they were ranked number two a couple weeks ago, but they have looked awful for the last 3 weeks. It's like the committee hasn't watched football. Hasn't watched them play football. They just saw that number two ranking earlier and thought they must be good. They're not a good football team right now. I don't understand the logic putting them in there.
Well, at least Wisconsin is over Iowa, because, I mean, I think Wisconsin's still a better team than Iowa. I still think that they're a better team than Iowa. And that was, you know, Wisconsin was the unranked team playing number nine Iowa last week. And, I mean, honestly, if you knew anything about football, you're going to put it on Wisconsin. You know, yeah, Wisconsin's going to win this game. And they went out and didn't embarrass Iowa. They embarrassed Iowa for 3.5 quarters of that game. So, two teams that just, I mean, I get why Iowa's there. They're 6-2. You know, if they're a top 25 team,
mind. 10 team for a lot of this year, you know, so you,
right. But Wisconsin, a three loss team in the top 25 is absurd.
Especially when absurd. There's undefeated, like a UTSA.
Liberty. They have Liberty. That's still there.
Liberty's, you know, not undefeated. But still,
still an independent that's, you know, a one loss team that should be
there. There are teams that should be there above Wisconsin, no doubt. Mitch, I think as far as, to kind of wrap this up, as far as the future of the college football playoff, Alabama is in a position where they went out there in, no question about that, now being ranked number two, right? At 7-1. Michigan State in the driver's seat in the Big Ten. Oregon, as far as the Pac-12 goes, being ranked number four is huge for the Ducks. If you can win out, win the Pac-12, you're in. At this point, guaranteed. If you ended up at 5, 6, 7 in this first poll, there would have been a question of what do they have to do? Not only do you have to win, but you got to win big. You got to hope that future opponents end up as ranked opponents so that you can get better wins on your resume. Like, you were going to need some help. But coming in at number four, that win over Ohio State, giving you that tiebreaker, as long as you can win out, win the Pac-12, Oregon's going to find themselves in the playoffs. I don't agree with that, Mitch. I don't believe in the Ducks. I don't believe they're one of the best four teams in college football. But the playoff committee has put them in a position where you went out, you're in. Oregon is in a good spot in this first rankings, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon's a very fun, exciting team to watch, but they're not a top four team in the nation.
I just look at all the teams around them, and I would expect all those teams around them to beat them by at least 10 points. Right? I mean,
Cincinnati would beat them.
Yeah. In a rematch with Ohio State, they lose by two touchdowns, in my opinion. You know what I mean? They lose to Michigan State. They lose to Georgia, Alabama. Like, you know what I mean? So that's my, that's not the fourth best team in the country. You just can't tell me.
I mean, just look at the, look at the teams behind them. I think Texas A&M could beat them. I think Wake Forest could beat them.
I think BYU would beat Oregon right now.
BYU might beat Oregon. Mississippi State could beat Oregon. I mean, there are definitely schools behind them that could beat this team. But, you know, they're a Power Five. They're a Pac-12 team. Pac-12 is held in some sort of high regard because of, I don't know, maybe the glory days of
Oregon
the
USC. Is held in high regard. USC is held in high regard. UW gets a bit of credit, but nobody else. If anybody else had the resume that Oregon had from the Pac-12, if this was Cal that we were talking about with that resume, they would not be ranked number four, Mitch. If it was Utah or Colorado or Arizona with that, they would not be ranked where they're at. They just, you can't tell me, like, it is, it's because it's Oregon or USC, some of those big brands. That's all that helps the Pac-12 there.
But down, they look pretty when they play.
Of course.
They
look, they've got great they jerseys, pretty, you know.
They look pretty in their jerseys, so we got to put them in there. Cool. What a joke. What a joke.
Let's hit on some games to watch, right? Week 10 in the college football season, we've got three games we want to highlight for you, starting with Wake Forest. We talked about them needing a big win. I think their first big test coming out of this playoff ranking comes this week against North Carolina, the Tar Heels on the road. Favored, Tar Heels favored at home, -2.5. A big opportunity for the number 9 ranked Wake Forest football team to go make a statement win. You know, North Carolina started as a top 10 team, Sam Howell. They were really good last year, lost a lot of offensive pieces. And, you know, it's not been a great season for North Carolina, 4-4, but there's still some built-in respect, I believe, there. And if you got a convincing win on the road right now, you're underdogs. So you go out there, you win by, you know, 2-3 touchdowns. I think this could be an impressive win. And right now, Wake Forest just needs to win impressively. Win out, win impressively, and just make sure that you're in that conversation. So it's an important game for the college playoffs. If Wake Forest is going to be that ACC representative, they've got to be undefeated, but they've got to win big.
Yeah, they do have to win big, especially against North Carolina. This is probably going to be their best test that they have inside of their conference. But I do want to add that Wake Forest, if you're a betting man listening to this podcast, Wake Forest 4-4 against the spread this year. So only 500. So got to look out for the spread. But I actually will take Wake Forest outright in this one at +2.5.
Yeah, they will have NC State at home. NC State's a pretty good team. And then they will go on the road at Clemson. Now, obviously, Clemson, not the Clemson we know, but still a brand where, again, you beat Clemson by 21. That's going to perk the ears of the playoff committee, right? We know what sort of program Clemson is. So resume builders, what you're looking for right now for Wake Forest. Mitch, a matchup of two guys probably competing for QB1 in this NFL draft class. Malik Willis versus Matt Corral on Saturday. Oh, by the way, Wake Forest, North Carolina, 9 a.m. Pacific kick on ABC. This game, Liberty at Ole Miss, also 9 a.m. Pacific time on SEC Network, ESPN. But Matt Corral versus Malik Willis. This is less about the game. Ole Miss, number 16 in the country, 6-2. Solid team. Borderline New Year's 6 team, potentially. Let's see how they play out in the rest of the SEC. But a matchup of quarterbacks that are just two of the most electric guys to the biggest stories this year in college football. As I said, guys competing for that QB1 status. If you have a statement game against, you know, that opposing guy, if Malik Willis just shows out and shows up Matt Corral in this game, he could secure that QB1. Same could be said for Corral. So an exciting matchup of two electric quarterbacks. That is why you want to watch this game, Liberty at Ole Miss.
Yeah, going to be an absolute shootout. Over-under set at 67.5. Take the over. Hammer the over in this one. Liberty right now at plus 9.5 underdogs. They're 6-3 against the spread. Ole Miss only 4-3-1 against the spread. But I think I'm taking Ole Miss outright. This is still just a better team. I think Ole Miss by two scores is a safe bet for someone to take.
Yeah, Mitch, the final game here to watch, the only ranked match, the matchup of ranked teams here. Number 13, Auburn at number 14, Texas A&M. Auburn, an interesting team, Mitch, at number 13. Lost to Penn State earlier in the year. Lost to Georgia, number one team in the country. Beat Arkansas on the road. Beat Ole Miss. That was number 10 at the time, so a couple top 25 wins, two losses to two top 10 teams. So they find themselves here, another opportunity against a ranked opponent this week on the road at number 14, Texas A&M. And then they'll have Mississippi State, another team that's ranked. So Auburn with a chance, you know, here in the next couple weeks, you get two big wins here back to back. You could see yourself in the top 10, kind of same for Texas A&M, right? Being in the position that they're at number 14, obviously you're going to have Auburn here, and then they have Ole Miss on the road the following week. So both teams sort of at that, you know, the edge of New Year's Six bowl contention, top 10 contention in the playoff. You want to try to make some statements to, a couple weeks of good matchups for both these teams. This should be an interesting matchup. I don't really know where to lean on this. Bo Nix had a good week last week, but I just don't trust him at quarterback. Great matchup for running backs, though. Isaiah Spiller, Texas A&M, Tank Bigsby, Auburn, two of the best in the country. That should be fun.
You know, all the game average stats point towards Auburn. In fact, actually, they are 4.5-point favorites, both teams 6-2, both teams 5-3 against the spread. But Texas A&M is a tough team to play at home. Give me Texas A&M at home -4.5 to win this game over Auburn.
Well, and as an Alabama fan, you do want Texas A&M to win and look good. Only further solidifies.
Oh, and especially beat Auburn. Auburn.
Right. So. I mean, obviously you're not an Auburn fan if you're a Bama fan. But you know, as far as that loss goes, you want that loss to look as good as it can. And if Texas A&M ends up as a top 10 team and looks pretty dang good, and the only loss you have is to that team, that helps Alabama out a ton. So, makes sense that you're rooting here for the Aggies. Mitch, to wrap up the campus tour, you got to give our player to know before the NFL draft. To recap who we've talked about so far: edge rusher Aiden Hutchinson from the Michigan Wolverines, quarterback Malik Willis from Liberty, edge rusher Kayvon Thibodeau from the Oregon Ducks. Last week, USC wide receiver Drake London. It might have been a curse. Maybe this thing is cursed, because Drake London immediately gets injured the next game. He's out for the season now for USC. Big blow for the Trojans on what's been an up and down season. Drake London, though, it seems like he'll be healthy enough to participate in the pre-draft process. And considering what he has done this season, the tape he's put up, I don't think this injury is going to hurt his draft status by any means, as he competes for maybe that number one wide receiver, at least for first round wide receiver conversation. This week, the player to know before the NFL draft is Kenneth Walker III, the running back from Michigan State. Kenneth Walker, been one of the surprise players, emerging players this year in college football, arguably the favorite for the Heisman Trophy, in my opinion. 175 rushing attempts, 1,194 yards, if you didn't do math real quick, 6.8 a carry, 14 touchdowns for Kenneth Walker, the transfer from Wake Forest, spent his first 2 years in college football at Winston-Salem, transferred to Michigan State this year, and has just exploded for the Spartans offense. He's reached 200 yards in a game twice already this season, coming off a win against Michigan in which he had 197 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns. Mitch, Kenneth Walker has emerged as running back one in this draft class. And if you listen to most draft experts and draft analysts, it's likely we're not going to see a running back in the first round this year. Maybe even second round, maybe even top 50. It could be a day, you know, a round three run on running backs, as there's solid players, but not top tier talent. But Kenneth Walker and what he's done this year is going to push that narrative and push that conversation a bit. I think Kenneth Walker's squarely put himself in the top 50 conversation, borderline first round pick, depending on team need, early second, you know. So you're thinking of Javonte Williams, J.K. Dobbins tier of player. That's kind of what I'm thinking in my mind. But Kenneth Walker has been excellent for Michigan State. He's showing power, broken tackle ability, which translates so well to the NFL. When you're looking at college backs, that's what you want to look for. Kenneth Walker showed it all this year. And as I said, you know, Breece Hall, the running back from Iowa State, it's kind of been the running back one through this process. Nobody else has really emerged. Zach Charbonnet from UCLA early in the season, perhaps, but it seems like Kenneth Walker has secured that, and he's a favorite for the Heisman for a reason. He is a stud guy to keep an eye on. If you're a fan of a team in the NFL that needs a running back and you're looking for a guy, you might want to be keeping an eye on Kenneth Walker. He is a lot of fun.
Well, or if you're a guy whose dynasty team you're trying to rebuild through next year's rookie draft, maybe you want to keep your eye on Kenneth Walker, built like an absolute brick.
You're hoping he goes to a good situation in that case, you know?
I absolutely am, because guess what? I'm selling Aaron Jones, Saquon Barkley. So if you're in our dynasty league and you listen to this, guess what? They're on the trade block.
A free plug for the fantasy team. I love that.
You know, built like a brick, 5'10", 210. You know, just I mean, he's the prototype for a built running back. A guy that has elusiveness, power, able to run in between the tackles, able to spread it out and get off the edge really well, or get around the corner really well. Like you said, the 1,194 yards, 14 touchdowns. Kenneth Walker has really emerged as, in my opinion, the best running back in college football.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there. Second in the country in rushing yards, Kenneth Walker there. But I got to give a shout out. I did not plan this, but I'm just seeing him up here. Got to give a shout out to my guy, Tyler Allgeier.
Allgeier.
It's Allgeier, Mitch, but I appreciate the effort. It's good, but we're learning this now. So this is a good guy to mention, because another running back in this draft class, potentially, Tyler Allgeier from BYU, number 25, 5'11", 220, just a guy that keeps the legs churning. Last week against Virginia, he rushed for 266 yards and 5 touchdowns against the Cavaliers. He's third in the country, by the way, in rushing yards. 1,132, leads the country in rushing touchdowns with 16. Allgeier is a stud, a redshirt sophomore, technically with the COVID, but 3-4 years into his career, he could declare for the draft. Haven't had an indication yet from Allgeier as whether or not, you know, he would be going to the NFL, but considering the season that he's had, and sort of the, you know, the way this running back draft class is shaping up, I think he'd be wise to move on, likely a third, fourth round pick, but a fun player, a guy I think will stick around in the NFL for a while. So had to give a shout out to my guy, Tyler Allgeier there.
Only reason I said Allgeier instead of Allgeier is there is a NASCAR driver, Justin Allgeier, who spells his name the exact same way. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
No, you know, it's fine. You tried your best and you didn't succeed. Sometimes it happens.
Sometimes you suck. Sucks just suck less, Mitch.
But that's what we're here for. Mitch, that's it for the campus tour. It's time to wrap up the podcast with our quick picks. And boy, did I have a rough week last week. I don't remember a time in the history of doing quick picks that I've had a week this bad. 5-10. 5-10 last week on my picks. Just absolute whiffs everywhere. You didn't do great. but you were 8-7 above 500 and gained three more games on me. The current standings now, Mitch, 69-37. Nice. Dallin.
Nice.
63-43. I'm not dyslexic. 63-43. So six games back now. It's a six game deficit. But as you know what I did? I texted you on Monday night after the picks were solidified. And you know what I said to you? What did I say? I was like, hey, it's a rough week, but that means it's only up from here, baby. We can only get better. So I'm feeling confident.
In fact, you said rough week, but that just means it's time to bounce back.
Exactly. You see how I'm doing. We got to keep it positive. We're like Ted Lasso up here. You know what I mean? We're just being a goldfish.
Hey, Mitch, you went 8-7 last week, but that's like Snyder 20. That don't impress me much.
I love it. I love it. That's great. So that's where we're at. And let's jump into the quick picks for this week, Mitch. And let's start Thursday night football. Mike White coming off a 400-yard performance and a win over the Bengals for the New York Jets. Zach Wilson, is he out of there? Are they giving the franchise over to Mike White? Robert Saleh seemed to just at least sort of stoke that flame a bit for fun. But Mike White versus Carson Wentz, Indianapolis Colts. Mitch, I know that the Jets rallied around the backup, got an impressive win on Sunday. Don't want to take anything away from that, but this is still not a good team, and it's just not going to happen twice. The Colts, though, I think are a good team. And I think they bounce back after a tough overtime loss to a division rival. Give me the Colts at home.
Yeah, I like the Colts at home as well. Mike White is not the answer. He had a great week, but I don't think this is a guy that you can depend on week in and week out. He might be just a one-hit wonder. Shout out to the guy that threw $1,000 on Mike White being the top passing yards leader for the week and won like $25 million or whatever it was.
Wow.
So,
bold move, my friend.
Hey, shout out to him. You know what? If you got $1,000 to blow, I guess that's a good $1,000 to blow. So, but give me the Colts at home. Following that game, Denver, they are traveling over to the Lone Star State, Jerry World, to take on the Dallas Cowboys. Give me the Cowboys at home, even if Cooper Rush is still playing. I think that Denver losing Von Miller in that trade just hinders their defense a little bit more. The offense is unimpressive, and Dallas actually showed that they can win with Cooper Rush and still play good defense. So I like Dallas at home.
Yeah, you know, Denver, I can't imagine what the team feels like having traded away, your leader, your franchise icon. I mean, Von Miller is the face of the Denver Broncos. And he has been for years. And to lose that player, how that feels in the locker room, I can only imagine. Now, Denver started 3-0 against a horrible schedule, lost four straight, got it back, you know, with the win against Washington last week. But I'm with you here. Don't know if it'll be Dak. Don't know if it'll be Cooper Rush. Cooper Rush, also a guy like Mike White that had an incredible week. I don't think it's going to happen again. But you don't need him to go off to win, especially against this Denver team. So I'm with you. Give me the Cowboys at home. Mitch, a rematch of don't know which Super Bowl 30-something, 40-something, 30-something.
37. 37?
Patriots. 2003? Yeah. Patriots, Panthers, the 4-4 Pats, and the 4-4 Panthers. Got back on track with the win against Atlanta. Now, Sam Darnold knocked out at the end of the game. Will he be back? Is it going to be PJ Walker? That is tough. But I'm rolling with my guys. I probably should. I'm saying this right now. As I make this pick, I'm picking the Panthers. Last week, I picked against them because of reverse psychology, and it worked. And here I am back to picking the Panthers, meaning that they're probably going to lose this week. Don't know why I'm doing this as I'm speaking it out loud, but I committed. So I'm picking the Panthers. Keep pounding. Let's go, PJ Walker. Hopefully Christian McCaffrey's back.
I wish I could say keep pounding, but with the prospect of Sam Darnold possibly being out,
XFL legend, PJ, XFL MVP PJ Walker, drop the mic. What else needs to be said, bitch?
But also with the prospect of Christian McCaffrey possibly not being back in full. Give me New England in a close game in Carolina. Give me the Patriots. Following that game, the Raiders. They're leaving Las Vegas, Sin City, to head over to the Big Apple to take on the New York Giants. Give me the Raiders on the road. Coming off the bye week, Rich Bisaccia has that team playing well. I know they have another distraction that they have to deal with, but at the same time, Henry Ruggs wasn't contributing all that much to that offense anyway. So I don't expect much of a drop-off for the Las Vegas Raiders. Give me the Raiders on the road in New York.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Raiders as well, Mitch. The Giants defense, especially the last couple of weeks, I think has been pretty solid. Impressive performance against the Panthers a couple years ago. And even I thought an impressive performance Monday night against the Chiefs, but that offense is very bad. That offense is very bad. The offensive line is bad. And Daniel Jones is just not very good, especially with the circumstances surrounding him. So you have to be able to take advantage of this Raiders team by taking advantage of a weak defense. And I don't believe the Giants can do that. So even though the Giants defense might put up a valiant effort and hold the Raiders to 24, 27 points, which would be a success against this Raiders offense, not going to be enough for the Giants. So give me the Raiders on the road. Mitch, NFC South matchup, Atlanta Falcons, New Orleans Saints. Falcons coming off a loss to the Panthers, 3-4 in the season. Saints getting a win over Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but they lose Jameis Winston for the season. ACL. Tough look. Trevor Siemian comes in. He looked okay. Taysom Hill out of concussion protocol this week. Could be available to start. We don't know the health statuses yet. So if Taysom Hill is fully healthy, ready to go, would they start Taysom coming off the IR? Or would they give it to Trevor Siemian, who came in relief last week? I don't really know. But I'm taking the Falcons in this one just because I don't want to touch New Orleans here. I don't want to touch New Orleans. I still believe they're volatile. I know they're 5-2 right now. I still believe they're a very volatile team. So Atlanta is a competent team, at least fairly competent. I think they can do enough to eke out a win here. Give me the Falcons on the road.
I don't disagree with you, but for some reason, I find myself picking the Saints here. I find myself picking the Saints, and when we look at their record, which is 5-2, and somehow the Saints are 6-2 after losing Jameis Winston and having to go to Trevor Siemian or Taysom Hill, that just feels disgusting. But I think the Saints win an ugly win to get to a really disgusting 6-2 that I don't think the Saints would be at. Give me the Saints in the Big Easy. Following that game, Minnesota, they are leaving the northern part of the United States to head over to the state of Maryland to head over to play the Baltimore Ravens. Give me Baltimore at home. Lamar Jackson, that whole team is rolling right now. The Ravens look a lot better than they did in the first couple weeks of the season. The Vikings, very hit or miss of what team's going to show up that week. I like the Ravens in this matchup.
Yeah, I'm with you here, Mitch. I'm going to take Baltimore at home. The Vikings, like you said, hit or miss, 3-4 on the season. And, you know, Sunday night, a disappointing performance, obviously, to lose to Cooper Rush and that Cowboys team. You would have thought this is an opportunity to get a win, get above 500, you know, put yourself in that playoff conversation in the NFC. Now they're not, you know, and an even tougher matchup with the team coming off a bye in Baltimore. Baltimore seems like it's been one of the most consistent, if not the best team in the AFC, in my opinion, so far this year. They should improve to 6-2 this week. Give me the Ravens. Mitch, AFC North matchup, a great one here. We talked at length about the Cleveland Browns and their predicament, 4-4, and they're going to head to Cincinnati. A battle of the battle for Ohio. Cincinnati, Cleveland Browns, let's go. Can the Bengals maintain that lead above the Browns in the AFC North? Can they stick, get back to the winning ways? I think the Browns get a gritty win here. They get back on track. Give me the Browns on the road in an upset over the Bengals.
That's only because you're a former Clevelander. That's only
I love Cleveland. Skyline chili is over. Come on. Spaghetti and chili. That's gross.
Give me Cincinnati. Give me Cincinnati. Ooh. Joe Burrow. This team is good. They're beating Cleveland in this game. And I'm going to say by two scores, two scores. Cincinnati gets this thing done. Following that game, Buffalo, they're leaving upstate New York to head to where, Dallin?
The swamps of Jacksonville.
That's right. The swamps of Jacksonville to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Give me Buffalo on the road. You know, if this were a game in August or September, I might be picking a little bit different just because Buffalo leaving upstate New York and playing in that humid conditions. But this is November, everybody. The weather's a lot more favorable down there in Florida, and Buffalo is going to the Super Bowl. So give me Buffalo to beat Jacksonville. Not only that, Jacksonville also sucks balls. So Buffalo.
The Jaguars looked awful against a bad Seahawks defense and Geno Smith. Yeah, give me the Bills. Like, come on. If you're going to get blown out by the Seahawks defense, you're going to get stymied by the Seahawks defense, and you're going to give up 30 points to Geno Smith. Come on. Come on. Just pack it up. Urban, just go to USC at this point. Like, what are we doing? You know, go take the job at Michigan when Harbaugh gets fired. Like, do whatever, you know, come on. Like, what are we getting at this point?
If he Bobby Petrino'd this situation, would you blame him?
I would blame him, yes, but I would not be surprised. This is his own doing.
Yeah.
He's a doofus.
He's a doofus. Doofus of the week. Doofus Urban Meyer.
Mitch, following this game, unfortunately, just gets worse here. Garbage game of the week.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Got a horrendous AFC South matchup here, Mitch. Or no, not an AFC South matchup. Just a bad AFC matchup. 2 1-win teams. The Miami Dolphins and the Houston Texans. Both 1-7, both in a bad spot. I'm going to pick Miami here because just Miami should be the better team. So I think they're going to be able to get a win. Houston is awful. Houston is bad. It's really bad.
I love that synopsis there, Dallin. I just think Miami's a better team. So Miami should win this game.
What else is there to talk about when there's 2 1-7 teams?
Exactly. But that's about as good as you possibly could have made it.
If you were looking for some deep analysis, you went somewhere else. Okay. People know what they're getting here.
Miami over Houston. Easy. Following that game, the Chargers, they're leaving SoFi Stadium to head over to the city of brotherly love to take on the Philadelphia Eagles. Give me the Chargers on the road. This Chargers team going to bounce back after the loss last week. Philadelphia had the easy win over Detroit, and I feel that team's playing just a little lackadaisical after this easy win. Give me the Chargers on the road.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a big win for the Eagles against a very bad team. Philly, 3-5 on the season, very up and down. 0-3 at home, Mitch.
Not good.
0-3 at home, and they will be playing at home against this Chargers team. Give me the Chargers, losers of two straight, lost to the Ravens, lost to the Patriots last week in a tight one. Should get it back on track here against the Eagles. Mitch, game of the week. Game of the week here Sunday afternoon, Green Bay, Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers. Yes, the Chiefs are 4-4. Maybe not, definitely not what we expected. Green Bay obviously at 7-1, but Chiefs need some answers after a not a very impressive Monday night win. An impressive win because you got a win and they needed to get a win, but not an impressive win against a bad Giants team. But I am going to buy that this is the week the season turns around for the Chiefs. They're going to get a win against the Packers here, get back above 500, and this is going to be what sparks the engine moving forward. This propels them forward, the momentum for the rest of the season, beating a 7-1 Packers team, overcoming a rough first half of the season, and really moving things in the right direction. That's what I'm buying for the Kansas City Chiefs this week. I am picking Kansas City to win this game.
I think that week is coming very soon. I don't think it's this week. Give me the Packers in a close game on the road in Kansas City. It's going to be a kicker game. Harrison Butker, Mason Crosby. It is going to be a kicker game. We're going to have an overtime matchup where Mason Crosby hits that game-winning field goal. I'm calling it right now. Give me the Pack. Following that game, Arizona, they're leaving the desert to head up to the city by the bay to take on the San Francisco 49ers. Give me Arizona. San Francisco banged up, not playing well. They had the tough loss to Indianapolis in the rain. Arizona is still the best team in the NFC, in my opinion. And Arizona will have the big bounce back win after the loss to Green Bay. Give me Arizona.
Mitch, I'm taking the Niners in this one. Oof. Niners got to win over the Bears. Not a good Bears team, but they got to win over the Bears. Elijah Mitchell been looking good. That offense looking better. They've got some weapons. I think the Cardinals, in a daze after losing to the Packers, they drop another one. Give me the Niners at home. Upset lock of the week, baby. I don't know. 3-4 Niners. I don't know. What's the odds? Do you have that pulled up on this game?
I will find that real quick.
I don't know if they're underdogs. I would assume that the 7-1 Cardinals would be favored to the Niners. But, you know, it's just these interdivisional games are always weird. It's going to be some teams that surprise us with the win. And in the NFC West and the parity in this division, I think the Niners get it done here, get back to 4-4, and really start making us ask some questions about the Cardinals.
Right now, the Cardinals, 1-point favorites.
1-point favorites. Okay. So upset lock of the
over
week.
Over under at set at 45. So
upset lock of the week here for me. Folks, Sunday Night Football. Tennessee Titans, 6-2 with Adrian Peterson in the backfield, taking on the Los Angeles Rams. Von Miller, the newest Ram, expected to play in this game. Big matchup, 7-1 Rams, 6-2 Titans. No Derrick Henry is definitely a bummer here. But Derrick Henry or not, I was picking the Rams in this game because I do believe they're the best team in the NFC. I believe they're the best team in the NFL. They've been the most impressive to me, and they've only gotten better. So Rams at home, SoFi Stadium, to get to 8-1 and take back the lead in the NFC West.
Yes, I got the Rams at home as well. I think just the better team, Another great matchup here, but you know, a better team. And without Derrick Henry, Tennessee's going to have some tough sledding ahead to try to figure out that pass game and how to supplement the pass game with their bandaged up, pieced together run game. So give me the Rams. Following that, the best game of the week, because the Chicago Bears are on Monday Night Football. They're leaving the Windy City to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And you know, Dallin, I was thinking this week that the Bears looked really good with Chris Tabor calling the plays. And maybe if Matt Nagy comes back, the play calling situation would change, and that maybe the Bears will put that elsewhere. Just maybe. And I'm a dreamer, Dallin. I'm a dreamer. I like to dream and I like to hope, and I'm going to hope and dream here. Give me my underdog lock of the week. The Bears on the road in Pittsburgh at +6.5. Give me the Bears. You got to be crazy if you think I'm not taking them. Bears on the road against Pittsburgh on Monday night. Lock it in.
If you like defense, this is going to be the game for you on Monday Night Football. Not going to be a high-scoring affair with the Steelers and Bears defense. These are some of the best defenses in the league and some of the worst offenses in the league, frankly. I'm saying like under 30 points scored, probably like a 17-13 win. But I'm taking
over under set at 40. So you could take,
yes, take the under there. And give me the Steelers at home to beat the Bears. Mitch. You know, listen, you know, this Bears team, it's not very good. And that doesn't mean there's not room for hope. Justin Fields, he gave you that hope on Sunday. You lost that game, but you came out of that game hopeful and excited, right? Because Justin Fields showed you just how special he can be. And that's what you're going to see from him this year. It's going to be a lot of bad, a lot of rookie stuff, but he's going to have those moments where you're like, man, that is who that guy could be one day if he figures it all out and they get the right team around him. But he's going to have maybe some moments in this game, but not going to be enough. Steelers at home on Monday Night Football. And Mitch, that's going to wrap it up for the quick picks today. It's going to wrap it up for the podcast. We appreciate you sticking around, listening to the Sports Hour this week. If you don't already, go ahead and give us a follow on our socials. The Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys, Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys, TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lil Thoint. Mitch, tell the people why they should be listening on Anchor.
Well, you should be listening on Anchor because you can become a part of the conversation. You could be you could go the extra step here and be a contributor to the podcast and be a saint like my mother Sammy and my father David are. But you can also go on there and leave us a voice message to be a part of the conversation. We will play those voice messages on here. You could be a part of the Sports Hour episode that comes out week in and week out. You can go ahead and follow us and submit your questions there on anchor.fm/thesportshourguys. You can listen to us anywhere that you listen to your podcasts. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review and tell us we suck. Because, Dallin, that's the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we get better. And again, appreciate Jordan and Tanner for their comments on our Instagram story. As we pose those questions, we'd love to hear your thoughts and see you participate there. So we appreciate that. A note before we leave, Mitch, Braves up 6-0 in the top of the 7th.
I will be turning on that broadcast as soon as we're done here.
Absolutely. So. We'll see how the World Series could end tonight after we shut off this pod. So we look forward to discussing the end of the World Series next week. Continue to talk about the NFL, college football, NBA, all going on right now. All so much fun. We appreciate you being here with us, sticking around. We love you, and we will catch you next week.
See ya!